Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Thanks for tuning into our award-winning public affairs program, For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Spring is here, and with it comes a rash of invasive species of plants and animals that can impact everything from our yards and gardens to our woodlands and waterways. So we're going to open with an invasive species expert from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and we're going to zero in on the foreign flora and fauna we should be looking out for and learn a thing or two about how to mitigate them. Then we're going to talk data breaches, which are increasingly affecting everyone, from businesses to homeowners to retailers to hospitals, even credit monitoring services. We're going to unveil a number of proactive steps users and businesses can take to better protect their data and computers with the CEO of a Connecticut IT and cybersecurity consulting firm. And finally, on the final Sunday of April, Call Before You Dig Month, we're going to talk to a utility representative and remind everyone doing excavation or just putting a shovel in the ground this spring why you need to dial 811 two full days before you dig. And we'll talk about a few new things that are making this important public safety program even easier to participate in and potentially more effective. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Voquette, right after this reminder. Hey, if you're seeking information on how to plan for future long-term care costs, you're going to want to attend the next public forum, The Missing Link in Retirement Planning, Why and When to Consider Long-Term Care Insurance. We already told you last week about a forum that's coming up in Windsor, but that one is sold out. So they have rescheduled a second forum on May 22nd at the Windsor Public Library. The program starts at 6 p.m. and the state of Connecticut, in conjunction with the Windsor Public Library, are going to present this two-hour session, which is absolutely free and open to the public. No insurance sales are going to take place, but you'll benefit from this forum if you're between 40 and 65 years of age and have or plan to have assets of at least $75,000, excluding your car and home, when you retire. To register for the program, call 1-800-547-7-3443, or just register online by clicking the public forum link at ctpartnership.org. Well, over the next couple of weeks of programming, you're going to be hearing about this month and that month and all kinds of months. April hosts a lot of different types of activities. One that is important that you should be aware of is April is invasive plant pest and disease awareness month. So we are so pleased to be welcoming a very special guest from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Samantha Simon is the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Senior Invasive Species Coordinator. She works with the development and implementation of agency responses to invasive species and is a resource to internal and external partners to accomplish key initiatives, helping to eliminate the risks that invasive species pose to American agriculture, forests, and grasslands. She has done a little bit of homework and keyed in on a few unique things that we're going to need to know about here in Connecticut, but what isn't in Connecticut yet could certainly be here any day or even any minute, right, Samantha?
That is correct. Thank you for having me on the show today. I really appreciate it, and I'm looking forward to telling you about hungry pests and what we're doing to try to prevent their spread.
So you have been campaigning all month on behalf of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Tell us a little bit from a broader scope. In your assessment, right now across the country, are we a little bit more in trouble when it comes to invasive pests or invasive plants?
So for invasive pests or invasive species, really we think about it in terms of the whole. They're non-native organisms, whether they're bugs or they're animals or they're plants. And they're likely to cause or they are causing economic or environmental harm. They may be causing harm to human, animal, or plant health. So we're really, with the increase of travel and trade, we're really being bombarded every day by invasive species, regardless of what type they are. They can even include pathogens.
Well, we talked a little bit before we went on the air about our affinity for all things agriculture. Tell me, in terms of the food we eat and those farmers and industries who provide that food to us as consumers, in that respect, what invasive concern keeps you up at night?
So really, during Invasive Plant Pest and Disease Awareness Month, we're looking at the 20 hungry pests, the 20 invasive species that USDA has identified that are easily spread by people through the things that they pack and move, and those that are economically damaging to agriculture. So we're looking at these hungry pests because they cost the nation $40 billion each year in damages and expensive eradication and control efforts.
Mm-hmm. Well, while there may be some overlap to what is threatening at a national level, along with what is threatening here in Connecticut, from a big picture, what's going on nationally that may not have yet impacted or seriously impacted Connecticut that we should be, if not looking out for, at least aware of at this point?
The big impact right now that we're seeing is really it's time for fruit flies. Mm-hmm. So we have exotic fruit flies that we are constantly monitoring for, whether that's in California or Arizona or Texas or Florida. And we also have quarantines that are put into place and eradication programs. So we're actively trying to control and eradicate any new exotic fruit flies that we find that are constantly coming into the states. This is the start of the season. And the concern for Connecticut is that if you're traveling to these states, or if you have folks that you know, you don't want to be bringing homegrown fruits and vegetables or homegrown plants back with you, because those homegrown plants, those homegrown fruits and vegetables, they could have pests and you could unknowingly be giving them a free ride to your state.
Hmm. Well, I am so old that I have vivid memories of the killer bees scare back in the early 1970s. Can you tell me a little bit about the kind of fruit flies that Connecticut consumers, grocers, growers are subject to now versus these newer generation species that are coming through other states, including ones that USDA has quarantined?
So a new fruit fly that we just identified in the last year or two was the European cherry fruit fly. This actually, we found it in Niagara Falls up in New York.
Oh, it's pretty
and
close.
Yes, and it impacts sweet and tart cherries, and it has other environmental hosts such as honeysuckle and dogwood. The key for folks in Connecticut is, one, be aware of the quarantine zones that exist in New York. So if you're traveling to New York and you're looking to get some cherries, make sure that you know of the quarantines and you follow the quarantine regulations. And two, if you happen to travel up into Canada and into Ontario, you should not be bringing cherries back from Ontario because the European cherry fruit fly is up in Ontario, and we do not want to unknowingly be bringing that pest back.
Okay. What else is on your radar in terms of invasive pests?
There's a relatively new invasive pest that is in the Northeast. It's the spotted lanternfly. This has been causing agricultural damage in Pennsylvania and in New Jersey, and it also threatens Maryland, Delaware, New York, and Virginia. Hmm. There's state quarantines that are in place right now in Pennsylvania and in New Jersey. This pest, it likes to feed on 70 types of plants and trees, particularly apples, grapes, hops, and hardwoods, and it's a really great hitchhiker. So that's why we want folks to be aware of it.
And what are the implications of either this one that you just talked about or the fruit fly as they inevitably begin to spread, and hopefully we're slowing and eventually stopping that spread, but you quoted an astronomical number in terms of kind of overall damage. But say for a small state like us here in Connecticut, it's interesting. We just had a spokesperson for the Connecticut Apple Growers Association on the program last week. You just mentioned that this new pest is in part partial to apples. Tell us a little bit about how these pests coming into Connecticut can make an impact.
They can impact Connecticut's forests, your mm-hmm. crops, and your landscapes. And they can throw the whole ecosystem off. They can have, if they're left unchecked, they can damage an entire agricultural industry, which would eliminate jobs. It could threaten our food supply. And, of course, it costs millions or billions of dollars in eradication or control efforts. So that's the important part, is to understand that these pests, they are a threat to our agriculture. They are a threat to our environment. They are a threat to the economy. And the public, they have a significant role in trying to prevent the spread.
Very good. Well, we've talked on this program kind of at length about the emerald ash borer beetle, but which kind of travels if you cut wood and bring it into Connecticut. And I do think we still have a ban on out-of-state wood here in Connecticut. Tell me a little bit about the plants that are of great concern here in Connecticut that may be invasives and flourishing either in neighboring states or in states where Connecticut people may travel to or from frequently.
There are lots of plants that are invasive throughout in Connecticut and throughout the U.S. In fact, within the U.S., we have more than 4,000 invasive species, and so that's why it's important that folks understand what invasive species are. They understand, for plants in particular, if you're in your garden or when you're going out to buy plants for your garden, make sure that you're talking to the retailer. Make sure that you're asking, is this plant invasive or not? And it's really a good decision to go native and to make sure you're not planting invasive species in your gardens. That's one of the pathways for how these plants end up in our environments.
Well, we've heard that message before: go as native as you can, or go wholly native in terms of plantings. But it must be sometimes frustrating for people in your world and with your expertise to know that despite the potential harm that invasive plants can cause in states where they are not beginning to take a good hold yet, that people can still go to one or many garden centers or retail garden shops or big box stores and purchase these plants.
That's true. You can. The retailers, the big box stores, they are becoming more aware. States are also becoming more aware. You'll read in the news that states are continuously adding plants to their list of plants that can't be sold. So there are states that are starting to get that message out. The big box stores, the gardens, they're listening. And so it's important for people to understand that the big box store is going to supply what they're requesting. And so if you're asking for natives, if you're asking for non-invasive, non-native plants, then those are the things that, when the demand comes, the supply will follow. So it's important, people do want to know, they want to have a nice lush garden. They want to have it full of bright, vibrant colors. Natives can do that. Natives are good for the pollinators. And, if you do have invasives in your garden, remember, don't be sharing those. Destroy the seed heads before they can spread. Just be aware.
Good.
Well, final key point of importance is, since we're talking about this in April, it's because about 35 million Americans move every year, and that increases the risk of spreading invasive species and transporting them long distances, never mind just from state to state here. Talk a little bit, if you could, about how people should check for pests before they move and how they can eliminate those pests coming with them.
Right. Spring is a popular time for household moves, and unfortunately, people can also move invasive pests, oftentimes unknowingly. So it is very important for folks to carefully inspect their items that are stored outdoors, such as their grills, their bikes, patio furniture, even their vehicles. Make sure that they're looking for insects and egg masses and that they're removing these before they put those items into a storage container or into a moving van. These pests are great hitchhikers. The European gypsy moth, it loves to lay its egg masses on flat outdoor surfaces. So it's important to be looking for those. The spotted lanternfly is the same. It likes to lay its egg masses on those flat outdoor surfaces. The adults also are great little hitchhikers. They will jump on you, and they can get into open windows for a vehicle. They can ride along if you're, parked under a tree. They fall onto your vehicle, and they'll ride along.
Okay. Well, in the last minute or two that we have then, let people know how they could learn more through the USDA about what to look for in terms of what are invasives if they're traveling so that they're sure to not bring it back. Or if they happen to see a new or strange bug or insect around their property or some plants starting to spring up around their property or in their gardens. Where can they go to learn more and get some help in identifying and maybe some tips on eradicating them?
So there's a couple of resources that citizens can use. If you're moving, go to yourmovegypsymothfree.com. There's a great online checklist available at this website, and it will walk homeowners through the items that they should be reviewing and double-checking before they load them to help prevent the spread of the pest. If you're at your home and you're out in your yards, you're in your gardens, or you're taking a trip, go to hungrypests.com. On this website, you will find information about what pests threaten your state. There's a little state drop-down list. You can pick your state, and it will tell you what's in a federal quarantine, what state quarantines are there, and what other pests would love to come and live in your state. That hungrypests.com website, it also tells you the signs and symptoms of these hungry pests. It provides photographs and descriptions, and it has a lot of helpful links for folks to use that will help them, for spotted lanternfly, how to remove the egg masses. For Asian longhorn beetle, it will tell you what to be looking for. So a lot of helpful links there.
Excellent. April is Invasive Plant Pest and Disease Awareness Month, and invasive insects and plants are a real problem. The insects attack trees, plants, and agriculture, and are costing the United States about $40 billion annually in damages. About 35 million Americans move every year, as we said, and that increases the risk of spreading invasive species. Or you could just go to your big box store and bring them home if you're not sure what you're buying. So it is important to check. To learn more, go to hungrypests.com. We want to thank Samantha Simon. She's with the U.S. Department of Agriculture's she is the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Senior Invasive Species Coordinator, speaking with us this morning. Samantha, great to meet you. Great information, and thank you so much for being on the program. So I don't know if you have ever been the victim of a data breach, either personally or professionally, but data breaches are affecting all types of businesses, retailers, hospitals, even credit monitoring services. like Equifax. And while we can't completely prevent these types of attacks from occurring, there are proactive steps users and businesses can take to better protect their data and their computers. With us today is Eric Burendorf. He's CEO of Evernet, which is an IT and cybersecurity consulting firm in the greater Hartford area. And we're going to have an extended chat on what folks can do at home and at work to safeguard the information that you treasure, because certainly there's a lot of unscrupulous people out there on the web all around the world that treasure that documentation. Right, Eric?
That's absolutely correct. Thanks for having me.
Sure. So first, let's right off the bat, talk a little bit about yourself and Evernet. Were you a computer kid that sort of grew up into this business and started this company of your own?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've been doing this for more than 15 years, I think, professionally. I started the company almost 15 years ago. I am old enough to say now that I probably started with, you know, RC cars and Nintendo back in the 80s, before the internet and personal computers were kind of ubiquitous in every home. So yeah, I mean, I'm a kid of that generation, but always was fascinated with technology and getting computers and robots and things of that nature to do things, you know, in that way. It's just a lot of fun for me. So I just transitioned into a technologist when I was in college. I went to college up in Burlington, Vermont, and got my degree in management of information systems. Came out of college, worked for a company that did IT consulting in an outsourced capacity, and loved the model of working for many different businesses, meeting a lot of different business owners and key stakeholders and things like that. Mm-hmm. And just decided at one point I just wanted to deliver the services that I felt represented what I felt was in the best interest of the client. And I never looked, you know, I haven't looked back since. So I started Evernet and have been consulting area businesses, like I said, for almost 15 years now.
Great. Evernetco.com is the website, folks, if you're interested in learning more about the company. We'll hit you with that a couple times throughout the interview. So, Eric, tell me, if you can, do you recall the first time either you discovered you were hacked or you were working or going to school somewhere that got hacked?
Oh, wow. That's the first time I think I've been asked that. I think the first time I personally downloaded a virus was in college, maybe in high school, back in the mid-90s somewhere, and it's so geeky to even talk about this, but the virus, you know, back then there was this program going around called Sub7, and people were circulating, they would send you this virus in your AOL email, and it would allow the hacker to remotely control your computer. So as soon as you double click on it, you see your mouse start driving across the screen. Huh. And it was a new experience for sure. And it was fascinating to me. And, you know, so I just started, learning more and more about, cybersecurity and, you know, really, all IT guys and gals really are hackers. You know, it takes a wolf to catch a wolf. You know, it takes a system admin to manage a system and to hack it, quite frankly. So, you know, it's just, you got the good guys and the bad guys as in all things. So but we don't go around saying we're hackers because it's not really marketable. Yeah. But really in reality, you know, we know these systems just as much as the hackers. So, you know, that's how that goes.
Yeah. Well, that begs.
But yeah, my,
I was going to say, that begs the question. Do you think that the world has kind of flipped from a situation maybe, you know, 8, 10, 12, 15 years ago where people, companies and agencies getting hacked were getting hacked because it was more of a thrill or a challenge or a game on the part of the hacker? And now, as so many more companies have gotten prolific and gotten online and in the cloud and are storing so much more important information on computers, it's flipped. Like, that thrill of the hunt hack is the extreme minority of hackers now, and most of the hackers that are out there are actually out there to get information that they can then somehow profit you by using.
Yeah, so this is a really interesting topic. I didn't think we were going to go in this direction, but this is fun for me to talk about. Hacking, is just about tinkering. You know, and network admins and network engineers and the guys that build all this technology stuff, we all share the same kind of interest in how do things work, how do complex systems work, how do we get these machines to do our bidding, if you will. In the early days of computing, hackers, when they started, you know, when they started doing things that were nefarious, I think it was for more of the thrill and, hey, can I more hijinks, I think. But it doesn't take long, you know, as the economy started leveraging computers and the internet, it doesn't take long for bad actors to monetize these things. So, you know, the hackers, I think, that are writing these advanced viruses and these processes to exploit us and access our bank accounts and our tax information, all these things, I think it's probably, in a lot of cases, less technically sophisticated individuals who are, quite frankly, just building a business model around it. There could be probably a big debate and a lot of speculation about who these, you know, it's even said that a lot of the hacking is done by state actors, you know, governments and things, you know, those agencies, government agencies and things like that. So the motivations of hacking, yes, it's for the thrill of it. It's for the economics of it, the business behind it. You know, there's big business in hacking people, you know?
Yeah, and it's becoming more prolific because so many more smaller, more vulnerable companies still have important information that's worth something to somebody.
Well, it's a twofold, I think. It's becoming more prolific because, more and more business functions continue to be digitized and made available on internet-connected computers. But also, more and more businesses are springing up to provide us more services and function to our lives digitally. For example, and I keep saying this, but you know, I can, from my cell phone, I can open my garage door, set my thermostat, pay my credit card bill, book a babysitter, order dinner.
See what the bald eagles are doing on the Chepauk Dam in Southbury.
Yeah, exactly. So really, the target keeps growing larger, for sure. Just because of the very, you know, just because of the scope just keeps increasing as to what we can do with you know, internet connected computers.
Yeah. Well, this speaks also to smaller business person, the lower profit margin. Excuse me, and a desire to try to conserve funds by maybe DIYing your internet and IT security.
Right.
Can we talk a little bit about the reasons why folks might want to think twice before just installing an antivirus protection software and leaving it at that?
Right. So, I mean, look, the reason why businesses use computers is because they're the modern day shovel. You know, if you owned a business of digging holes, and you started digging the holes with your hands, and the shovel came out, you bought a shovel and you could do more with less. You know, a computer is the same thing. And businesses, that's why businesses use computers. They're doing, you know, the workload that we're we're all doing now is far more than what we could do in the past without computers. So it's a vital business tool, but, you know, it needs to be protected and managed seriously, because while the tool can provide a business with the capital, it can also take it away. I mean, how much business can you do if your computer is down with a virus or other failure? So unfortunately, you know, the IT budget can be varied based on the different types of businesses and the business owner, or, you know, the key stakeholders, their agendas. You know, we see a lot of clients where the leadership in the business of our client is older and doesn't quite have a total buy-in to the necessity and importance of managing and securing the IT. That's really scary when you see a business that feels that way, but also has regulatory and deep implication to protecting and exposing their client data. Mm. I see that a lot, and still in the medical industry, we have a lot of clients and would be clients that we make recommendations to our clients every day that they implement or they don't implement. You know, we can't dictate to our clients what they should do. We just tell them what they should do, and we facilitate doing it for them if they, you know, decide to do it.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we still see, and I understand it. I mean, I'm a business owner myself. I understand this stuff is very, really expensive.
Yeah.
I started Evernet because of that, because I felt like, you know, with my former company, at times I felt like I was maybe pushed to sell something that was more than the client needed, and I just didn't like to do that. So I started Evernet, and I only wanted to do good business for good businesses, and I felt like profits would follow that. And it turns out I was correct. So,
super. Well, we're gonna try to help every business owner or someone who knows them that's listening to the program, either on the air or through the podcast. Eric Burendorf is with us. He's CEO of Evernet. EvernetCO.com is their website. Check them out if you'd like some more information. We're going to give you some more information when we come back from our break. We're about a little past the halfway mark with our chat with Eric. We're going to come back and talk about steps businesses and individuals could take to protect themselves online, especially those all important passwords and ways to administer them to make your situation, business or personal, as safe as possible. We'll talk about backups and common mistakes that people make with them and their computers, and some other tools that businesses can utilize. We'll be back with Eric Burendorf, CEO of Evernet, right after this break. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. The pathway to recovery can seem hopeless for adults struggling with a significant mental illness. On Tuesday, May 7th, Consortium is holding a free open access event on Legion Avenue in New Haven for adults and their families who are struggling with mental illness and possibly co-occurring substance use. Visitors can come by between noon and 5:30 p.m. to consult with doctors, clinicians, and nurses about their loved one. Then from 5:30 to 7:30, visitors can attend a panel discussion to learn and interact with experts on topics including de-escalating techniques, marijuana and psychosis, alternatives to the emergency room, medication management, and sharing experiences with a Q&A involving those experts. If you'd like more information about the event or to register, all you need to do is visit continuumct.org/access. Well, thanks for sticking with us. Obviously, your interest is piqued and you want to know how to better protect yourself in the cyber world. Eric Burendorf is on the line with us. He's CEO of Connecticut-based Evernet. EvernetCO.com is the website. So, Eric, thanks for sticking with us here for this second half of the segment. So let's get right to the business of talking about businesses and individuals and the steps that they can take to best protect themselves online.
Sure. Yeah. So I was probably running on a little bit before the break, but let me just say that everything we do for our business clients really applies to the individual as well. We strongly recommend and sell an essential suite of software and services that include antivirus, backup, patching, and monitoring. Those four things every single internet-connected computer should have, and that includes home, you know, individuals, home users, home computers. There are a lot of free tools and things, but every computer should have those four services, and that's one of the things. That's the kind of the centerpiece of what we do for our clients, among many other things. But so I just wanted to say that, you know, what we're talking about, while my focus is generally on the business realm, the individuals out there that may not, you know, be business decision maker or, you know, dealing with this in a business capacity, it's certainly relevant to them as an individual as well. Mm-hmm.
So I guess passwords are a real big thing for you.
So I'm really beating the drum lately about passwords. Look, we read about the TurboTax hack, the Equifax hack, these Target, Home Depot, these companies are getting hacked. And what the hackers are doing is they're harvesting, when they get access to these companies, what they're looking for aggressively are usernames and passwords for that particular company's database. And what they're doing is, and it's highly automated, and what they're doing is they're taking usernames and passwords that they've harvested from one hack, and they're simply running those usernames and passwords against every internet service that they can find on the internet, including banks, Facebook, social media, your utility bills, everything. And they're finding it incredibly easy to hack at various levels many people simply on one reason, and that's because people are still using the same password for many, if not all, of their online accounts. Mm-hmm. So without a doubt, I cannot stress it enough that a unique password, a unique complex password, should be used for every single internet service that an individual or business uses.
Okay. So instead of the 123456 that's so many people use, let's talk, if we could, about some of the ways that, you know, people who have so many other things to think about can employ your advice in a way that doesn't mess them up or get them kind of locked out of their critical services online because they can't remember the specific passwords, and obviously you don't want to be carrying them around with you on in your wallet or something, right?
Yeah. So, we at Evernet, we have a couple tips and tricks and tools that we recommend our clients. But again, it works for the individual as well. It comes down to developing a system for managing your passwords, just like anything else in life, whether it's your bills or your personal documents, things like that. You just have to develop a system. We have a system that we help our clients implement. It can be as simple as, look, you have a Gmail account. You have that account connected to your phone. With that account comes a contact database. And very simply, if you create a contact card in your Gmail or Facebook, you can put it, there's a notes section where you can put your username and password. Mm-hmm. Not the most secure thing, but look, it's something. And the idea there is, if you have your Gmail account on your phone, you use Gmail on your laptop, you use Gmail on your mobile, or on your iPad, rather. Next time you need to log into Facebook and it prompts you for your password, you have a go-to place for that, and you keep it organized. Every time you change your password, you update it in your contact card there. That's very rudimentary. Some people argue it's not secure. I say it's as secure as your Gmail account is. So okay. Certainly, wherever you store your passwords, if it's digitally, make sure that the password or your password database is secure. So that leads me to something a little more professional or commercial, but there are several tools called password managers, and effectively it does the same thing. I think Dashlane is one, LastPass is one that I like. These password management services are provided to individuals and businesses that will install a web browser plugin on your computer, an app on your mobile. And what it'll do is it will follow you around through your various internet usage, and every time it detects you prompting or needing a password, it will save your password into the password management database and kind of help you recall that easier next time you log in. Now, my argument with password management, password tools rather, is that they are also a single point of failure, and they have been hacked, or they've had security issues in the past. I don't want to say they've been hacked, but they've had their own security issues. So again, single point of failure, but I promise you, using either the contact storage method, as I previously said, or a password manager is far better than using the same password for every single account.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that we want to make sure we talk about before we have to say farewell to you for today, and I'm seeing just based on the myriad talking points we barely got near, that I'm probably going to want to visit with you again at some point in the next few months, Eric. But, going back to the very earliest days of my working on computers back in the early and mid-'80s, backup was a was kind of like the holy grail. This is no matter what happens to the hardware or the software or the cloud, or the connections, if you have a backup, then chances are you're not only way ahead of many others, but you probably are going to be able to restore much, if not all, of what might have been lost for any myriad reasons. So let's talk about backups real quick.
Yeah, so the best defense is the best offense. You might have heard that before, right? Mm-hmm. So when a client calls us and says, "Oh my God, we've just been hacked. We're getting a prompt that says our data has been encrypted. We have to pay these people in order to get our data back." Our clients who listen to our consultation, who have subscribed to our essential suite of tools, AV, backup, patching, monitoring, we don't worry about it because we just go to the backup. So the backup is not just protecting your data, it is an integral piece of the security picture. Security, as you said earlier, is not just antivirus. It includes antivirus, includes backup, and many layers. But backup is definitely, as you said, it is vitally important. And the challenge with backup is data, in the past has been expensive to store, and data has been expensive to backup, and it still is in many cases. There's a lot of expensive backup solutions out there. So the individual and business owner out there has to decide and work hand in glove with their IT vendor. How much risk and exposure that they want based on what they can afford. And that's one of the things Evernet helps with our clients, is we help them kind of work, see what available products are out there. Our essentials tool is great. It covers up, backups the entire system and the data, and backs it up securely to the cloud. And that's really one thing that a lot, you really want to get to as close, businesses want to protect and back up the full systems every chance they can, because the viruses, if you get hit with a virus, the best way to know that you're clear of a virus is to just do a full restore of the system from a backup when you know it wasn't infected. If you try to, a lot of antivirus removal is not, you can't always tell you're good to go after that. So
super.
Backup is key.
I do look forward to chatting again, Eric, for today. We're over time, but well worth the extra few minutes. Quite valuable information and an interesting direction that the conversation did take. And I appreciate you being able to go there and talk about this stuff.
Sure.
EvernetCO.com. EvernetCO.com is the website to go, or you could follow Evernet on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Meet Eric Burendorf on LinkedIn. He's with us today from Connecticut-based Evernet, talking about data breaches, because they're affecting all types of businesses, retailers, hospitals, even credit monitoring services. And while you can never really completely prevent these types of attacks from occurring, as you're hearing, there's some important steps that you can take. Eric stands ready to help if he can. Feel free to get in touch with him once again. Eric Burendorf, founder and CEO of Evernet, thank you so much. Great to chat with you. Well, right about this time every year, we check in and remind folks about the importance of three little numbers, 811. Those are the numbers you need to call before you dig. This is a free service to anyone excavating within the state of Connecticut. Calling that number is the law. Call before you dig. Service enables excavators to get information on the location of underground utility pipes and cables in the area of the proposed work site. And we're here to talk about why and how to do it and how Call Before You Dig is making things as easy as possible for you, both before or on the rare occasion when maybe someone that you are working with or working for you has already sadly struck some sort of underground utility. Tom Bashaw is with us. He's with the Iroquois Gas Pipeline Company and represents Call Before You Dig here in Connecticut. Great to see you again, Tom. Last time we visited at your place, now we have you here in the studio. Thanks for coming by.
Yeah, well, thanks, John. We appreciate the opportunity to come on and get our message out there.
So 41 years now, Call Before You Dig has been identifying important utility lines for excavators. But really, the thing I think we should kick off on is talking about how important it is if you're installing a new mailbox post that might have gotten knocked down by a plow over the winter, or you're getting ready to sink some posts to hang your garden fence on, or any kind of local digging. Maybe you're fortunate enough to be able to put in a swimming pool. Lots of reasons why casual diggers, homeowners, really, really need to be aware of Call Before You Dig.
Yeah, John, you know, the excavating community, construction industries, they're familiar with it because it's something that they're involved in on day-to-day activities. But to get the message out to homeowners, especially now, April being a safe digging month proclaimed by the governor here in Connecticut, that we encourage homeowners when they're getting out there, starting to do their sprucing up of the yards and, like you said, putting in those swimming pools and mailboxes and shrubs or what have you, it's important to notify the utilities, and they can do that through 811 or submitting a ticket online.
Right. There's an e-ticket system, right?
Yeah, we a few years back, we came up with a new platform to make it make the ability of entering e-tickets more accessible to users. And they can go online, they can do it on their phones, and it's quick and easy. And we've actually increased the usage where we're about up to 83% of our ticket volume that comes in now is done through e-ticket process.
Right. Well, I guess it's important for folks, especially homeowners, to know whether they're hiring someone to do some excavating or they're planning on getting out the hand tools and doing it themselves, that 6 out of 10 incidents here in Connecticut these days that happen in terms of underground utilities being impacted are happening due to something called insufficient excavations practices. And I guess that probably has to do a lot with either misinformation or just unfortunately ignorance of the fact that for a lot of people, they may either not have a clue that they have multiple underground utilities that might be crisscrossing the periphery or even the middle of their yards, but also that you don't have to dig down too deep to impact a utility line.
No, that's correct. Some gas services that are going into residential homes can be a foot and a half below ground. And nowadays, a lot of them are plastic and they can be damaged with, you know, with hand tools, with a shovel or pickaxe.
And working for the Iroquois Gas Pipeline, you probably know firsthand that especially hitting a gas or electrical line or even a cable TV line can go bad really fast.
Oh, sure. Not only can it be, you know, quite hazardous to the safety of the public, but, you know, it can be quite an inconvenience for, say, for example, a fiber optic line is damaged, communications go down, internet goes down. And so, and even for a homeowner, I mean, you know, nowadays people are on their computers and looking at their cable TV and their Netflix, and, you know, dad's out there digging up for putting in the new fence and strikes that cable. The kids aren't going to be too happy.
Yeah, Murphy's Law is that the cable you strike may not, maybe the one that's outbound out of your house and inbound into about 20 of your neighbors.
Yeah, that's correct.
Well, there's a couple of other new initiatives that Call Before You Dig has been working on over the past couple of years. Let's talk a little bit about this new platform for requests.
Like I said, Ticket Access makes it more user-friendly for folks to go in. Mm-hmm. And nowadays, it's people are on their cell phones. It's more convenient. So they can go in and enter it through an app, or they can go in through their PC and enter an e-ticket. And there are tutorials. There's instructions on how to do it as they log in. Now you have to register, which is quite simple. Just give an email address and create a password.
Yeah, but it's free.
It's free. The service is free. Yep.
And what should people expect if they've never called 811 or used Call Before You Dig app or online before?
Well, if they do have any difficulties going online, we do have operators that are working. They can dial the 811 number, and operators will actually help guide them through the process.
Mm-hmm. And what will they expect? If somebody is planning to do some excavating of any kind, either themselves or with a contractor on an upcoming weekend, they shouldn't be trying to call at like 4 o'clock on Friday afternoon.
No, they shouldn't. The law in Connecticut states that you have to give 2 full working days prior to the excavation work happening. So if they called it in on a Friday, they couldn't actually start their work till Wednesday because they would have to wait Monday, Tuesday.
And what exactly happens when a call gets registered by someone who is going to be doing some digging? Somebody comes out and actually physically it makes an inspection?
Yeah, what would happen is when somebody puts in a request for excavating, that request comes into the clearinghouse, the one call center. The one call center there then notifies any of the affected utilities in the area, because the utilities have service areas where they mark out or where they require ticket notifications to come in. So they get the request, then the utilities will come out and mark out their utilities in the area. And the excavator will also get, with the new ticket access platform, will receive a confirmation letter through an email. So it'll be a reply saying that which utilities have responded and what the status is of it.
So digging in a little deeper, Tom, so somebody's going to be digging in their yard. They call or register. Then somebody comes out. From what I've seen years ago when I had to do a Call Before You Dig appointment, they basically came out to the street in front of my house and spray painted some arrows and identified the kinds of lines that were coming into their yard, into my yard from the street. But if somebody's got a very large parcel and they're going to be doing some digging way in the interior of that, how do they know that an arrow that might be pointed on the street is actually going to be true to the path of that utility line across the entire scope of somebody's property?
Well, typically for the utilities, what the utility owns, even going onto private property, the utility will actually mark the utility going right up. So say, for example, a gas line. The gas meter mounted on the house, the utility will mark all the way up to that gas meter. After the meter, it's owned by the customer. And so we do have access on our website where people can go in, and there are private locating contractors that a homeowner could call. They would come out. They do charge a small fee for that. But they will come out and look around your property and locate any privately owned utilities that may be in your property.
And given the way Connecticut is, both topographically and the way that subdivisions and developments happen these days, is there still a heightened concern on the part of folks like you that are involved with Call Before You Dig that new homeowners who may have moved into one of these houses from out of state would really have no clue as to where all the utilities are?
There's a very good possibility that they wouldn't, depending on, what was provided to them when they purchased the home. One thing they can always do is, like I said, go onto our website, and there's private locating contractors that will come out to the property and locate and give them some information on where any of those utilities may be.
Great. And I guess it goes without saying that professional contractors who may be hiring subs that come in from another state for doing excavating, that's also a key audience for you folks.
That's correct, yes.
Very good. One of the other things we want to talk about is both damage access reporting and a brand new APR system that's in development that may be in place by the end of the year.
Yeah, I'll start with the damage access. Damage access is another platform that we have on our website, and it's a tool used for anybody that sees anything on violations. It's a way to report violations or damage done to underground utilities. Mm. And it helps us develop a metrics or where we can concentrate damage and education efforts on.
Very good. And the APR system?
The APR system.
About?
Yeah, APR is something that we're working on. We'll hopefully get that out maybe early 2020. APR is an automated positive response system, which when a caller submits a ticket request, all the utilities go through the clearinghouse once again, and the ticket requester can actually go online or dial into a number and get a status of what their ticket request is without having to wait the two full working days. They can find out what the utilities are doing and what's been marked out, what's been done.
Oh, okay. So, this is something that will be absolutely, you're counting on it being in place before 2020's call before you dig month.
Yeah, we're hoping it is. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, we're hoping so.
Excellent. Well, Tom Bashaw is with us. He's with Iroquois Gas Pipeline, becoming a regular spokesperson for the award-winning For the People here on Call Before You Dig Month. We needed to squeeze it in before the end of April, but don't forget, 365 days a year, you need to call before you dig. The service is free to anyone excavating within the state of Connecticut, especially you homeowners and weekend warriors and folks doing chores and replacements and gardening and things around the yard. It's the law. Call Before You Dig enables excavators to get the information on the location of underground utility pipes and cables in the area of your proposed work site. And don't forget, the knowledge helps protect the excavators from harm and the facilities from damage. The life you save could be your own, and the inconvenience that you mitigate could be that of not just your family, but all of the folks in your neighborhood, especially if you dig into one of those communications or fiber optic lines. Don't forget, cbyd.com is the website. 811 is the universal number, or you can just download the Call Before You Dig app on your phone and really make it easy. Tom Bashaw, we want to thank you for being part of the program, and we'll see you next April for another Call Before You Dig reminder. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a PSA relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for airtime in writing to me via email at john.voket, that's john.voket, at connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast without permission of Connoisseur Media. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scotts, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voket. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and important information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.